Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're going to be talking about a jury verdict against Tesla in a discrimination lawsuit. Then a couple days back, we did get Rivian's S-1 filing as they prepare for their initial public offering. We'll talk about the details included in that filing, and then we've just got a couple of quick notes on Tesla's debt and Giga Berlin. Quick look at the stock, kind of the opposite situation of what we had yesterday to open the week. Tesla today actually finishing down only slightly, 0.1%, to $780.59. But that was in an up macro environment, the S&P, Dow, and NASDAQ all finishing up, the NASDAQ the best of those three, up 1.25%. So the predominant news around Tesla today is a decision made in a lawsuit brought against the company by a former contractor of the company, ONDS, who claims that he was subject to a racially hostile work environment during his time working with Tesla. And because this was a contractor instead of arbitration, which would be used with an employee, this did end up going all the way to a jury trial. The jury has come to a decision and has ruled in favor of the plaintiff, DS, for $137 million in damages. A clinical professor of law at Berkeley Law told Bloomberg that, quote, "I believe that's the largest verdict in an individual race discrimination employment case. Class actions are, of course, in a different category," end quote. Obviously, without being in the courtroom, we can't really get the full story from both sides. But Diaz's claims seem to center around the pervasive use of racially charged language, as well as offensive graffiti seemingly targeted at Diaz, who claims to have questioned at least those drawings to a supervisor, and the supervisor apparently ignored or rebuffed those questions. Eventually, Owen was demoted and then eventually quit. As for Tesla, the company did share a blog post today, which is a copy of an email to Tesla employees from their vice president of people. It's a bit long, so we won't read through the full text here. You can find it on tesla.com/blog if you would like to. But it just walks through some of the evidence that was presented to the jury in this case. So one of those things is that Diaz and three other witnesses who were all non-Tesla contract employees testified to regularly hearing racial slurs at Fremont, but they all did agree that while it's not appropriate in the workplace, that it was most of the time used in a quote-unquote friendly manner and usually by African-American colleagues. Tesla notes that Diaz did make written complaints to his non-Tesla supervisors, so at the contracting company, which were well documented, but none of those complaints did actually contain a specific racially charged word in question until after the contracting work didn't lead to a full-time offer and after he hired an attorney. Tesla notes that, quote, "The three times that Mr. Diaz did complain about harassment, Tesla stepped in and made sure responsive and timely action was taken by the staffing agencies. Two contractors were fired and one was suspended who had drawn a racially offensive cartoon. Mr. Diaz himself testified that he was, quote-unquote, very satisfied with the results of one of the investigations, and he agreed that there was follow-up on each of his complaints," end quote. Tesla also notes that despite the claims made in this lawsuit, Diaz, while working with Tesla, did recommend to both his son and daughter that they should try to work at Tesla with him. So at the end of the day, I think it's easy to understand both sides here. Obviously, no one should have to deal with discrimination in the workplace. No one should even have to tolerate it with the hopes of getting a full-time position or something. And from Tesla's point of view, this is a huge company, you know, these days employing 70, 80,000 people or so. And unfortunately, not every single one of those people is always going to act up to the standard that Tesla would like to uphold in every case. In this blog post, Tesla acknowledges that they weren't perfect back in 2015, 2016. They're still not perfect today, but that they're doing their best to grow and improve. And they note that since 2015 and 16, when Diaz worked in the Fremont factory, quote, "Tesla has added an employee relations team dedicated to investigating employee complaints. Tesla has added a diversity, equity, and inclusion team dedicated to ensuring that employees have the equal opportunity to excel at Tesla. And Tesla now has a comprehensive employee handbook where all of our HR policies, employee protections, and ways to report issues are published in one easy-to-find online document. We acknowledge that we still have work to do to ensure that every employee feels that they can bring their whole self to work at Tesla. And as I posted in July, we will continue to remind everyone who enters the Tesla workspace that discriminatory slurs, no matter the intent or who is using them, will not be tolerated," end quote. As for the size of the verdict, $137 million, obviously that's a huge verdict. I'm not sure exactly what stage this is at, but I think Tesla can appeal, and I'd expect them to do so if they can. But if they don't, or if that ends up standing, then even though it is a lot of money, obviously Tesla can afford to pay that without any major financial impact on the business. All right, next up here, we've got the S-1 filing from Rivian as they prepare for their initial public offering. This has basically their business plan and a whole bunch of other information in it. But one thing it does not have yet is the details of the offering. So you can see that the number of shares that they're trying to issue and the share price, those are both blank for now. So if you're wondering about those details, that will come later towards the IPO. But we have heard that Rivian is looking for a valuation somewhere around $80 billion. There is a part later on in the filing that shows that in January, some stock options were issued with an exercise price of around $22 per share. The reported valuation at that time was around $27 billion. So if they are seeking an $80 billion valuation, depending on how much stock they're trying to sell in the IPO, share price probably ends up around $50 to $60. Now, share price doesn't really matter necessarily, it's more just about the valuation, but people are always curious about share prices, so I thought I would include that, and it is actually going to be relevant to a point later on. All right, so as far as things that Rivian did actually disclose in the S1, the first one that is very interesting is their number of pre-orders. So they say that as of September 30th, they had approximately 48,390 R1T and R1S pre-orders in the US and Canada. I probably would have expected a little bit larger number, especially with the valuations that are being discussed. I don't think it's necessarily a bad number. It's tempting to compare it to the Ford F-150 Lightning, which has surpassed 100,000 pre-orders. But remember, the Rivian pre-order is $1,000 and the Ford F-150 Lightning is only 100. And then in terms of comparing with the Cybertruck, obviously the order numbers there are just a whole different level, but also a $100 order for the Cybertruck. As for production, they say that their normal Illinois factory is equipped currently to produce up to 150,000 vehicles annually, and that they think they can get that up to 200,000 vehicles by 2023 as they introduce additional R1 platform variants and expand the facility. As for their financials, not a ton to see there because right now they are pre-revenue, but they do say that for the years ended 2019 and 2020, they incurred net losses of $426 million and $1.0 billion respectively. Quite a few other interesting little details hidden in here. The first on their plans in terms of software integration, specifically software-enabled services, they say that they assume that the long-term revenue opportunity from software is $15,500 per vehicle. They believe that's comprised of autonomous driving capabilities of $10,000 and a monthly subscription plan for infotainment, connectivity, diagnostics, and other services valued at $5,500, which would be $550 a year over 10 years, or about $46 per month. On the autonomy side, they are providing vehicles with hardware that they believe will allow for a level 2 kind of right away, and then eventually be able to build up to level 3. Level 3, as a reminder, means that the driver can stop paying attention, but still needs to be ready to take over if alerted. And as far as the hardware that they are shipping, it's 11 cameras, 12 ultrasonic sensors, 5 radars, and a high-precision GPS antenna. So quite a bit of hardware there. Not sure exactly what they're using for compute. I didn't see that anywhere, but it's possible I missed it. It's a big document. Anyway, they think they can get $10,000 out of autonomy and then that $5,500 balance from those other things, including infotainment. Later on, they describe their infotainment plans by saying, quote, "We plan to enhance the overall infotainment experience over time with the integration of new technologies, including gaming, video streaming, digital payment, face recognition, and enterprise productivity features such as messaging and video conferencing," end quote. So not too surprising, but obviously a lot of emulation of what Tesla is doing in that area. That's kind of a theme throughout. Later on in the S1, they talk about their plans to offer telematics-based insurance. So sounds pretty familiar. They say it's, quote, "designed to use our connected vehicle platform and suite of safety features to provide tailored offers to our customers through one seamless experience," end quote. Something else that may sound familiar is here in the service section, and that is Rivian Mobile Service. They say, quote, "Our fleet of mobile service vans can perform a majority of vehicle care needs at the customer's home or place of work. Rivian Mobile Service is planned for any market in which we sell vehicles," end quote. And then, as we have known, Rivian is using nickel-based cylindrical battery cells, but I'm not sure if we had the form factor before. In the S1, they do say they're using 2170s. So again, may not be new, but happen to see that as well. One area that is a little bit different than Tesla is Rivian's plans for the commercial business or the fleet business. So obviously we know about the contract with Amazon for these delivery vans. They share some specs on those vans, which again here I'm not sure if it's new, but I hadn't seen it yet. The range will go up to 150 miles on the smallest one and up to 120 miles on the largest one. So these aren't super long range delivery vans, but I'm sure they worked with Amazon to match range and use case. They do note that they expect to deliver at least 10 of these vans in December this year, and then thereafter 100,000 of them by 2025. Kind of interestingly, on the fleet or the commercial side, if we go back to lifetime revenue components, and sorry, I think I said long-term revenue for that before, but really the same intended meaning. Anyway, they list charging as a service as one of their lifetime revenue components here on the commercial side, and their expected revenue there is $14,600 per vehicle. At about 14 or 15 cents per kilowatt hour, that would be 100,000 kilowatt hours, which would be, I don't know, 2,000 to 2,500 charge cycles. So maybe around 300,000 miles, which that number itself isn't super important to me, but the implication is interesting. And I think it seems to imply that Rivian is planning on providing all the electricity that these vehicles are ever going to use. So I don't really know exactly why that would be. I would assume that Amazon would just charge them themselves, at least overnight. So I'd have to do a little bit more research on that, but did find it interesting. As for other opportunities, Rivian does note their interest in unlocking new business models, including autonomy and energy services. They say, quote, "Our commercial solutions and expertise in managing what we believe will become the largest centrally managed EV fleet will allow us to unlock future service offerings, including autonomous mobility as a service for the movement of people and goods, and energy as a service for consumer and commercial customers," end quote. So hey, I gotta applaud the game plan, but I guess I don't really know how they expect to catch up to Tesla in these areas. I don't really see a differentiation of strategy. They seem to want to highlight controlling the largest centrally managed EV fleet through the commercial business, which Tesla wouldn't have, but pretty sure I would take Tesla's AI team over Rivian having a bunch of vans driving around. But hey, why not throw in your autonomy as a service and energy as a service aspirations, because it can't hurt the valuation, right? If you look at how Rivian presents themselves to customers, I think they focus on a niche. They're focused on, you know, well, we're the outdoorsy electric vehicle, we're the adventure electric vehicle, which I think is great. But then you read through the S1 and it definitely seems a lot more focused on the things that Tesla is doing, which there's not an inherent problem with, but I think it makes a lot more sense to focus on the things Tesla's not doing. And the S1 seems to focus on a lot of things that Tesla is doing. I think a big part of that is just the valuation that Rivian is trying to get. And again, that's fine, but then you have to actually compete with Tesla to earn it. The last really interesting thing here is the CEO compensation plan that Rivian has put in place. So there are two parts of this. One is 6.7 million shares, the other is 20.3 million shares. The smaller one is just time-based, and it happens over 6 years. Basically, every anniversary of the IPO would earn 1.1 million shares for the CEO, which if the stock does IPO at around $50 or $55 after accounting for the exercise price of about $22 per share, that would end up being about $25 million per year, even if the stock price just stayed flat. If the stock went up, it would be more. Then there's also the performance-based option, so that's the 20.3 million shares. And the way that I'm reading it is that those can't be earned in the first 6 years, but after the 6 years from the grant date, can be earned from a varying extent at share prices of $110, $150, $220, and $295. If those 20 million shares were earned at 295, that would be about $5.5 billion in total value. That actually doesn't seem too unreasonable to me, because that would have Rivian growing into, if my math is correct, around a $450 billion valuation. So if it were to happen, shareholders would be very well rewarded in that scenario. And I believe that grant would expire in 2031. As a shareholder of Tesla, I do like Elon's plan better because there's no time-based component, and Tesla also has those actual fundamental milestones. It's not just share price. Elon has to hit those revenue and EBITDA targets as well. So that's what I learned so far from the Rivian S1. Elon did also comment in a roundabout way on this today from a Tesla Roddy article talking about that $10,000 autonomous driving suite. Somebody had said, "That's great news. Too bad they have to wait for Tesla to finish so they can copy it, LOL. Elon replied to that with a couple of laughing emojis. Moving on then, the other thing that Elon did comment on Twitter today was an article from CleanTechnica talking about how it looked like Tesla has paid off a $1.4 billion loan agreement in China for Giga Shanghai early. Elon replying saying, "Tesla always pays its debts." So maybe a Game of Thrones reference in there. As for the debt itself, we did actually already talk about this when we went through the 10Q for the Q2 earnings report. That was where this was originally disclosed. It just resurfaced on Twitter recently, the last couple of days. So yeah, nice to see Tesla paying down its debts. We have talked about it though. And another reminder on that, Tesla will continue paying down debt in the third quarter. Remember also from the second quarter 10Q, Tesla announced that they will be repaying early some 2025 notes worth $1.8 billion. They have to pay about 2% early repayment fee on that. So that costs about an extra $50 million, but will reduce the interest payments that they have to pay going forward. So you'll have that reducing Tesla's cash balance when we get the Q3 earnings report, but to counter that out, Tesla should have pretty strong free cash flow for Q3, especially because they delivered more vehicles than they produced, which is a cash tailwind. All right, lastly today is just a little piece of information from a real estate site in Germany, which is basically talking about land use and development, and talking about how so far there hasn't been as much land necessarily developed around Tesla as maybe it was anticipated, because other suppliers to the Gigafactory may have been anticipated, but they say that area applications related to Tesla amount to zero. Quote, instead, Tesla has secured so much land that they locate their service providers on their own land, end quote. So pretty interesting. We've seen Tesla obviously try to co-locate pretty closely with CATL at Giga Shanghai, and it looks like they have sort of similar plans with their suppliers for Giga Berlin. Might not be a huge difference, but Tesla always trying to optimize as best they can those logistics elements. Oh, and then one other thing, Tesla did open up the shareholder meeting question submission process through saytechnologies.com. So please go vote for some good questions, use the search, use the filters. Right now there's a question about Tesla paying dividends as the top one. As a reminder, after last quarter, Tesla anonymized the process, so I'm not allowed anymore to tell you which questions are mine, but I think I can tell you that I don't like that question at least. So anyway, go vote, but that'll wrap it up for today. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and I'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday, October 6th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.